What is up, everybody? Today we're discussing if rap culture is killing black culture. That and a lot more on Black Hollywood Lives this week.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live this week.
Black excellence, black excellence, black excellence, black excellence. Look at me, black and I'm excellent. Look at me, black and I'm excellent.
Excellent.
Look at me, black and I'm excellent. Look at me, black and I'm excellent.
Black.
Look at me, black and I'm excellent.
Ooh.
And I'm in black like a funeral.
Yeah.
Too many cops make a funeral.
Yeah.
And they just act like it's cool to me.
Bah.
Look at me, black and I'm beautiful.
Beautiful.
Look at me, black and I'm beautiful.
Beautiful.
You just a square like a cubicle. Can't draw my circle like Hulu.
Yeah.
I go to work every day.
Day.
I'm trying to double my pay.
Hey.
I'm trying to triple my wage. Don't think we working the same.
No.
I came accustomed to pain.
Hey.
I'm a descendant from slaves.
Yeah.
Thank God we made it today.
Yeah.
You gon' remember my name. Black. Black. Excellence. Excellence, black, excellence, black, excellence. Look at me, black, and I'm excellent. Look at me, black, and I'm excellent.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Black Hollywood Lives this week. I'm your host, Daryl Kristen. We got very special guests today, but we're going to start off with Miss Courtney Stewart and her. Is that a Wonder Woman t-shirt you got going on?
Look at me, black, and I'm excellent.
Yes.
All right. You know, I can't really see. The logo is covering everything up.
No, it's actually Wonder Woman's Amazonian sister.
That's right. I'm feeling that. She's feeling it. It kind of looks like you on the t-shirt.
Yeah, you know, I try. I was kind of hostile today. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, so I feel a little aggressive. I needed an afro and an afro t-shirt and all of that.
Well, you rocked it well today, as always, Courtney. Our very special guest today, you heard his music right there. Starbound is in the house.
Yes, sir.
Loving that video, my
Thank
man.
You, man. I'm feeling
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
Especially with some of the topics we're going to discuss today about hip-hop and the way it's affecting black culture and just where we're at right now, especially the last week of a couple tragic killings of rap artists.
Yeah.
You know, this is the message that we need to be hearing right now, man.
100%,
so I'm
man.
Excited
Thank
to talk
you for having
to
me.
About
I really
it.
Appreciate it, man.
And you're rocking the t-shirt, too.
I see Black Excellence,
t-shirt.
Y'all.
Shopblackexcellence.com.
That's right. You can get those shirts over there.
Get on it, y'all.
All right, you got a lot of topics today.
I know. We have so much to talk about. So I guess we're going to jump in.
Just jump
sort
in.
Of on a high note.
Yeah.
Like, so this week we has some black excellence going down and some black girl magic going down on over there on OWN, over Winfrey Network. Ms. Mara Brockakill premiered her newest show, Love Is, and it was premiered to pretty rave reviews, and
yep.
People are really feeling it. It's like her love story, basically, sort of between her and her husband and how they met and, you know, made up for fiction into a series with some real cool new artists for you guys to check out in terms of actors. Like, they've cast some slightly unknowns.
Yeah.
And you guys should definitely be checking that out. But why she was also in the news is because, obviously, we love Mara Brockakill, and we have for many, many years. Especially black women, because she gave us our black Sex in the City with Girlfriends. And everybody that followed and loved Girlfriends, you know, we followed it, we loved it, and it randomly got taken off the air at a point in time that we were not happy about, so we did not get any closure.
You got copy your feelings a
did
little bit.
Did not get any closure. So we've been looking for closure for about 10 years now, because I think, no, more than 10 years, because they went off.
Has
in
it
like,
been that long?
I think they went off in 2007. Maybe it's been about 10 years,
wow.
Somewhere around there. So we've been looking for closure for a minute. We ain't got it. And we've been asking Mara, like, hey, girl, you got a script, like something we could do. And then we've been getting like little sprinkles from the cast, Tracee Ellis Ross, Jo Marie Jones. Like, they are all doing other projects and are always saying, yeah, we totally would be down. So we like, yo, what's up, Mara? Like, why we still ain't got closure, sis? Like, what's happening? So she gave an interview to Vulture and we found out a little bit of tea. And in this world of inclusion and all these strides we making as black and brown folks in the industry, some strides still ain't quite as far as we thought they were. Because Mara in her interview said the following, quote, "Girlfriends, it deserves somebody to see the value in it and write that check. That's what it's about. People often think I have the power. Well, I have a lot of creative input. I know the vision of it, but I need the money. That's what this industry is all about, supporting artists and supporting storytellers and hearing the audience for what they want and need. There is still a lack of value for what black women want, yet we have proven to be one of the strongest consumers in the marketplace. Yet we are still undervalued about what we want and what we need." Essentially, she said, I'm tired, y'all. I'm not knocking on these doors no more at these studios. They will not give me no money because they do not see any value in doing a Girlfriends movie.
Whew.
How, after Girls Trip, I mean, in the hell, do they not see
right.
any value
exactly.
in Girlfriends?
I mean, come on.
How? I don't know. I'm shocked. I'm sad.
To me, it's actually perfect time for that movie to be released. You know what I mean? Like, we're seeing a lot of change in content, from Netflix all the way down to movies. And if they were going to release it this next year, it's probably the best time to do it.
It would be
And it has such a cult following.
That's what I'm saying. It has a built-in audience already, not to mention the new audience that they could reach out to and grow because of things like Tracee Ellis being on Black-ish has grown an entirely different audience than she back years ago on Girlfriends. And I just, it boggles my mind that nobody thinks that this is a good enough idea to invest in.
Somebody will invest in it, and it will be huge.
Yeah. Hopefully.
We'll all be watching.
There was one cool thing, though, that Jill Marie Jones said. She said that if it didn't work out soon, she wouldn't mind if they waited like a few more years. Were like in their like 50s, and it was like Girlfriends meets Golden Girls with the black version. And that kind of got me excited. So I was like, I want closure like a little earlier, but that might not be a bad idea.
Yeah,
like,
but they could do both. You
know
what I'm saying?
We could go do it now and then do another one. And then 10 years, that the sequel comes 10 years later. Yeah.
It took Sex and the City a while to kind of go to the big screen. And
we
then
can't talk about that one because that second movie was not a good idea. But anyway, whatever.
And moving on.
Congratulations, Mara, on Love Is. Make sure y'all are checking it out and giving it its ratings over there on OWN because it is a really great show. All right, so
is this where the subject matter changes?
Where it starts
to go dark?
I try to
now?
Be like super perky.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, we're excited.
We're like, hey, we have black excellence coming in.
All positive. Well, excellent is not something or an adjective I would use to describe our government right now. So, if you have existed in the last, 24, 48 hours, you have seen we have been inundated with pictures, videos of immigrant children crying for their mothers and people being ripped away from their families at the border and put in what appear to be cages.
Wow.
Because basically what's going down is at the border, there is a policy that has existed for some time but was not being enforced that when somebody comes to the border illegally and they are essentially apprehended, if they are with a child, technically, legally, they are not allowed to keep the child in custody, though they are allowed to keep the adult in custody because technically the adult is potentially a criminal. So they would normally, legally, they could separate the parent or adult, whoever the adult is with the child, and the child is placed into basically a holding cell situation, call it whatever you like, and then the parent is or adult is put somewhere else to deal with the legal ramifications of coming to the border legally. I'm not actually sure like where we suddenly got this like roll of media about it, because this has been going on for a few months at this point. The Trump administration has decided to do a zero tolerance policy since around April, from what I gather, that there is no tolerance, meaning we will arrest everybody coming to the border illegally and take the kids, and the kids are not an excuse for you to get past the border, which apparently they're trying to allude to the fact that that has been the case more so in the past, that people, if you came with a child, they didn't want to separate the families, so it kind of gave you a pass to at least go into the country and then maybe have to reappear, but then people weren't reappearing before the judges like they were supposed to, which is the argument as to why they're keeping them now at the border and they're separating the kids. Problem is, April came, they decided they're going to enforce this policy all full force and whatnot, and it looks like they didn't really have it all figured out how we going to get these kids back to their parents, like how we going to figure out who these kids belong to later. Some of these children are very young. Some of them, they literally have shelters for the tender ages, which are babies, essentially. Okay. These kids don't know their names. They don't know where they are. Most of them, if not all of them, don't speak English. So they're being, ripped away from family or whoever they know, whoever they came with, and just placed in random places. Some are being placed with family. Some are being shipped as far as New York and Michigan and elsewhere. And mothers and aunties and whoever else have no idea where these kids are, how they're going to get them back. And apparently it looks like our administration has no real plan for how to bring them back together. So previously Trump... oh my God, I said his name, had said that he was going to, he couldn't sign anything to like make this not the case. of course, 2 days ago, he signed something that could make this not the case, which is what people have been saying for weeks, that you could totally sign something and stop this immediately. So he signed it, but he had no implementation strategy. The implementation strategy is y'all figure it out.
Right.
So here we are. We're the mess.
Hot messery.
And nobody seems to know anything about what to do, where to do it, how to do it, when to do it, whatever. So there's arguments on both sides. How y'all feel about seeing all these kids?
I mean, I'm going to let Starbound start because I have several things to say.
Well, first of all, it breaks my heart, man, to see, you know, how the living situations. You just gave me a lot of insight on, you know, what's actually going on with it. And even if they had to have this type of situation, it should be way better living situations than this for the kids at the least. Very upsetting, man. You know, really, in the time that we are in America, you know, we just need better, man. We need a lot better. A lot of things just keep coming up, and it feels like, you know, us as a society, you know, a lot of people are fighting for something better, and it feels like we keep getting hit with bad news back to back to back.
Yeah.
And I just hope there's a light at the end of the tunnel coming for us.
I hope so. This just has frustrated me so much in this whole entire process, because I know that he received an executive order. He said it was a lot of pressure from, like, religious leaders and political leaders and world leaders.
That's why he's claiming that he's signing this.
But just the fact that since he's been in office, how much turmoil has happened. And every day, it literally is something. And I don't care what they say about any former president. They can say whatever they want about Obama. It was never this much drama and things going on in office. And he was the first black president, obviously. Right. So Just the fact that, like, even, you know, now they were talking today and they were showing Melania how she had she was going to see the immigrant children who were detained at the border, and she was wearing a "I really don't care, do you?" The back of her coat.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's like there's so many things on social media that have gone on about that. Was it on purpose?
Just to give y'all information, because all of that sort of is evolving as we were coming into the studio. But basically, her office issued a statement saying that the coat didn't mean anything. It's just a coat. She just picked a coat off the rack. That's all it meant. A few minutes later, though, her husband's office, i.e. her husband, tweeted that it did mean something, and she wanted to show everybody that she recognizes how fake news is and how horrible it is and what the terrible things they're doing in regards to this story about the immigrant children. So she was making a statement against the fake news. So we grown folks trying to read and understand and trying to, you know, navigate our way through the hot messery have no idea, like, what, okay, were you trying to say something? Did that mean something? Or
Bottom line, you shouldn't award it's certain period. Things. When you're a professional and you're going somewhere, you know, you think about what you're wearing and what it means. And I feel like she's smart enough to understand that wasn't a proper thing.
I mean, it would have to be purposeful.
Yeah, have sure. to be. And then here's my thing. You have a team. They're letting you leave with that jacket on and in this type of climate and environment, and especially what you're going to actually go do, which is visit these immigrant kids, and you think that that's okay to wear. It's just it's so much just messery that's going on in the political office. I really don't even like to turn on the news anymore because of all this.
Well, see, and it's funny too, because, okay, so y'all that listen to the show know how I feel about 45, aka Cheetos, in my brain. So what my biggest issue in listening to all of this, because I'm like, okay, I can't completely tune out, because that's what a certain level people
want.
Because if you're not paying attention and you give up caring because you can't decipher any of this, then they win regardless. So I'm trying to, like, really, you know, mess through this, like, story and the layers and the constant, like, okay, well, it's the Democrats that did this, and then this already existed and they were already doing this in previous administrations and we just didn't know about it. And there's a reporter who did a whole thing, a photographic something back in 2014 that showed that we have been doing this for years. And then I spoke to some of my local friends who have some experience crossing the border and have family that have dealt with that and all of that. And they're like, that ain't new. Like, they've been putting kids in what appear to be cages. And I keep saying that if y'all didn't pay attention when they were talking about, they couldn't decide if they could call them cages or not. And that was a whole situation.
That's a kennel.
It looks exactly like
just
a kennel.
The fact that it looks like a cage
is a problem.
It's a problem.
And then 45 as a president, bro, like, his entire language in his press conference on Tuesday or Wednesday was literally, if the Democrats didn't do this, they want child slavery to go on. So they're hoping this happens so that the child trafficking can continue. And he was constantly coming, instead of just being like, you know what? This has been going on, but this isn't great, and we're going to stop it. Yeah. Like, leave it at that. He kept making it about trying to make it very clear that the Democrats did this, and that if they would act, even though technically the House could pass something because it is a Republican majority, he was trying to, like, give information to make it seem like otherwise. Like, he literally said they can't pass anything because the Democrats won't come on board, yeah. which is not accurate. And you're just like, dude, you're saying so many things that are, like, just straight up not true,
yeah.
number one. And it's very, very manipulative. And I don't know if y'all listened to him on, like, Monday, when he, before he decided to sign something, he was basically calling the immigrants vermin.
Yeah, he called
them vermin. Like, yeah. And I just, like, when you start to do that and pretend, and suddenly you're like, oh, yeah, I really care about the kids, but the Democrats, you're making it about your setup, and you're setting up this, and it's almost like he did this on purpose, held out, so that it could look like, oh, my God, see, I'm feeding you information that the Democrats aren't helping, and right. they're not trying to pass anything, because we know we're in trouble at the midterms in November, so I'm going to hold out until it's really uncomfortable, and then I'm going to come and look like the savior. Look, I signed it. I did this for you guys. I'm sending Melania down there to look like she really cares, and she finally tweets, even though she had been disappeared for, like, the last three months.
Where has she been? Right.
She suddenly cares about the kids, and I hope she does, obviously, but what I'm saying, it feels very, very calculated and very manipulating, and I can't believe otherwise, because nothing that they're doing, I mean, even down to her jacket, is very specific.
Like, yes.
And not, it's impossible to have been accidental.
Yeah.
So then I try to find, where's the money? Because this got to be about money some kind of way. Like, and if it's child trafficking, are we prostituting the kids? Does somebody have a deal with the cartels for real? And they're Are they trying to make it a mess at the border so that the cartels have an easier time because our resources are so channeled in this mess? And then our attention as citizens are just on that. So who the cartels hooked up with up there somewhere? Because there's something else going on here.
I didn't even think about that.
This is not surface. You're right about that. Like, yeah. It's not a coincidence that this is also major news suddenly, if it's been occurring to a degree. Maybe it's occurring to a higher degree now, but it's been occurring for a long time, and suddenly it's major news. So I'm kind of really upset and uncomfortable, because not just because the kids are there, but because we don't really know why they're there.
The whole reasoning is behind it. I mean, that makes it even worse.
I'm sorry, that was hella long-winded,
but I got
all kind of crazy conspiracy-ness going on in my brain now, and it freaks me out even more, especially listening to Pence and the entire, like, one day you're like, oh no, we didn't decide to, like, take kids away from their families, but weeks ago you did a press conference where you specifically said, yes, they're criminals, we're gonna take the children from their parents.
And he was saying that at the beginning, you know what I mean? So... yeah.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
And what do we do?
That is a conversation that, I mean, we could keep this as our only topic today, you know?
Yeah.
We'd like to know what you guys are feeling, actually.
Yeah, please tell us.
You guys are really good with giving us a lot of responses on the topics. Tweet us, you know, give us a message at YouTube. If you got solutions, listen, we all need to band together and try and figure it out.
Do you guys feel like when you're, because I saw lots on, like, my social media feeds and stuff, like, call this number and talk to this person and do it. Do you feel pressed to do that? Or do you feel like you are, should do it or effective in doing it? Like, any of that? Because
I think we should all do it, because there's power in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said I felt guilty because I did see one of my friends posted, and I, like, you know, I didn't call, and I think all of us should call. And I'm going to renege and gonna make sure I call whoever I need to call in and just say my piece, because of as more of us say something, you know. Hopefully something will change a little bit faster.
I agree. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I was just watching it the other day when I was seeing the kids crying, and just I got caught up in my feelings a bit. I was like, I gotta do something about it. You know, we can talk about it on shows. We can talk about it to our friends. We can have group conversations about it. But if we're not doing the proper things to do it, it's just going to continue.
For sure.
You know, and you're right. It's, you know, the changes in numbers, you know, the more people that are responding to this or have some type of feeling about it and call a number or write a letter, whatever it may be, that is where it will change, hopefully, change the situation. Hopefully.
I'm so dark.
It's
right
like
now.
I can't even like well, no, but no, you know what I mean? I can't even
I saw it so many times.
Say that it will,
and I'm always the person that I was once sending emails for like net neutrality to my friends, like y'all call this number, make sure y'all do this. Da, da. Mm-hmm. I saw all these posts about this and I'm so freaked out about why this is happening, how this is, I don't trust calling anybody because I don't see, like, I can't see the line straight. Like, I can't, and I haven't been able to, like, decipher, okay, it looks like this might be more the truth and the lane that is, so then I should be on that side. Because I don't know. At this point, calling my representative is going to do what? I mean, if they on the team that's actually, you know what I'm saying?
And we, like, we saw what happened with the election, and we thought, that, you know, we think that's honest. So.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know what to do right now. Yeah. So, anyway, that was my week, guys. Woo!
All right.
I feel great.
That's all right. Yes. We know how you feel now about that story.
Exactly.
No, it's all good. No, it's, you know, listen, you had some really relevant points. You made me think about some things I hadn't thought of before. Man. So it is sure scary. We're going to move on, though, unfortunately, to another scary, kind of dark subject, but it's that week. EUR Web Story Spotlight of the Week.
EUR Web Story Spotlight of the Week.
Well, when we were pulling stories this week, I actually thought this was an interesting subject because of what's been going on in the hip-hop community and the rap community in the past week. We've actually, you know, as we know, we've lost several rappers this week, from Jimmy Wapo to XXXTentacion, and also Tekashi 69 is also being investigated for Chief Keef's situation. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot in the news this week. It's interesting because there is a jazz musician, which we all know by Wynton Marsalis, and he had been interviewed about kind of the state of hip-hop and where he felt like the industry was kind of going. And he said, hip-hop and rap are more damaging than a statue of the Confederate commander Robert E. Lee. And EUR Web put that article out there. And I was like, wow, that's deep, you know? And it made me sit back and really think about what he said. And I was like, you know what? That's a good discussion for us because we are so heavily influenced by hip-hop. Hip-hop has influenced so much of our culture. And we've seen this argument before when we saw the beef between East Coast and West Coast, all the way back to Biggie and Tupac and Diddy and Suge Knight. And, you know, we are at a state now where it's like, you know, how much reality is hip-hop affecting the world and the black community as a whole? Because obviously hip-hop is something that is not just viewed by black people. Little white kids in Ohio and Minnesota are listening to our music, and they're hearing these messages. And hip-hop has been criticized in the past of also, you know, the sexuality, the lyrics, the name-calling of black women and putting that mindset in the N-word and putting that into our culture. How do you think that all of this that's been going on, especially in the last week, is going to affect us moving forward? Because, I mean, obviously we do have very positive hip-hop artists like yourself who are bringing dynamic new sounds to music, which I love, and in a very artistic way, which is a beautiful thing. But how do you feel the mentality of hip-hop is really affecting the black community right now?
Well, first of all, hip-hop is the number one genre in America for the first time over rock.
That's true.
So we're bigger than ever right now. It's a transitional period, and I think the artists, they're just, I don't know. I think a lot of the artists and people in general that are fans that are liking the music, they're getting engulfed in this facade of what music or what an artist or rapper is supposed to be and what, you know, what the lifestyle is supposed
to be.
And I feel like people get caught up in that too much. A lot of people in music now, they aren't telling the honest truths about, you know, who they actually are, where they actually come from, and talking about those type of things in their music, because there's a lot of other artists that, you know, they may be speaking their truths, and it's becoming extremely popular.
Yeah.
And, it you know, when things are popular, people want to remake it and try to be the same thing. I think the thing in hip-hop right now, I think we just need more people being honest and trying to uplift the people that are watching them. I think a lot of people don't think about what they're saying, what they're doing. They think about it as it's a business move because, you know, more people see you, you know, the more opportunities you can have to make money and things like that. But the kids are really watching this, man. Like, I was really upset with XXX. How you say it?
Tentacion.
I'm gonna say X.
Yeah, just call XXX.
Rest in peace to that young man too. But I was really disappointed at how the blogs and the social media in general posted him in his car on social media, I felt like that would that was a testament to where we are right now as a country in, or as a people in general, to be that desensitized to something like that, to just put it on social media for kids to see a dead person and somebody that they looked up to, and not even just the kids. You know, these people have, you know, he has people that love him, that grew up with him, that care about him, that are on social media just like all of us, scrolling and seeing that. Like, think of that was one of your friends or something like that. That's crazy. You couldn't even, you know, I can't even explain how that I would feel in that type of situation.
Yeah.
And I think we need more artists and people spreading love. And I do see it now. We need to, we need more of that. And from the fans, everybody just trying to spread love to everybody and just be great, man. Like, that's what it's all about to me.
No, I think you are very right. Like, I feel like we just don't, because it's weird, because like you said, this is not a new sort of argument about hip-hop. And thinking back to that Winston's quote about it being worse than a statue of Robert E. Lee, I take issue with that, because at first it's like, whoa, that's, maybe you got a point, maybe not. No, I don't think you have a point. I actually think that that was sensationalism.
Passionate.
But I think that we are not honest enough about what is actually happening in our culture.
Right.
And art often reflects culture. And some people argue, you know, is it art reflecting life or life reflecting art? And I think that right now it's our lives being reflected in the artists, because we are choosing these sort of facade lives, whether it's through social media or whatever. We're all living in a facade because we're seeing children gunned down in the street by people that are protecting them. And it's not something that we've been able to process yet as a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Some of us have, obviously.
Right. Sure.
But as a whole, as a country, as a culture, we have not decided that that is unacceptable. We have not decided that it is unacceptable that there are still ghettos in this country. There are still kids that can't get food, and we have an abundance of all of that.
We do.
So I feel like to blame it on, like, to say that the music is way more of a problem, if anything, the music has been a door that opened some people's eyes to a lot of things that they never knew about. Tupac and Biggie, and going all the way back to the beginning of hip-hop. Like, people didn't know these things were happening in the hood. People didn't care that these things were happening in the hood.
Right.
And so they were expressing, yo, this is what's happening. Like, this is what we're showing. Now, whether or not, like, you know, all, because people would be like, when Jay-Z and all the money and the yachts and the chicks and all of that, like, is that a positive thing? I don't necessarily think so, but that's with any art, there is balance. Like, there has to be both.
Sure.
And so I feel like it's weird because, like, thinking of hip hop right now, I'm not really thinking like, oh, hip hop is super violent, but I'm also not a consumer of the hip hop in this era the way that I would have been like 10 years ago.
Sure. Right.
So I think it's interesting that the violence portion of that is so strong right now, because what I feel is a lot more positive, and people like, I think, of Chance the Rapper, and like, those are the people that I'm like thinking of that are coming up. And yes, they're still expressing things that have been terrible and awful that are happening, but in terms of like their role, especially in community, and like what, like J. Cole and people like that, that are like, they're about something and they want you to be about something.
For sure.
And they don't want to just be, you know, out here fighting and buying cars and all of that. So it's weird that that's...
Well, here's the thing. I understand your point, but I think there's two sides to what his statement was. And he probably, I don't know, but maybe taken a little bit out of context is what he's saying. I when I read it, I took it as, yes, there are so many positive things in hip-hop and rap, but there also is a state of how it culturally affects the mentality of, we've talked about on the show, with just certain words that are used that young kids are listening to every day, and that's influencing them in their life. And yes, it's not the same of the, you know, the Robert E. Lee, who was just extremely, you know, racist. I mean, that's a different thing, but I understand what he's saying in the sense of they both had heavy influence on society,
keeping us in bondage,
and yeah, so sure. There's a element to that that I don't think that hip-hop or rap, I think it's a highly more positive things going on than negative, but there is still a tone of the, you know, what we say in our rap music to about each other and also about women and also how that's influenced by young people who are not of color, you know? And I don't know all the time if that's great. I mean, I've been in cars driving next to these teenagers who were rapping and saying the N-word, and I was like, well, you know, damn, you know? I mean, it's still a fine line. I think we have to be careful with.
But is it the music, or is it that we literally live in a world that, like the N-word, the fact that we're still debating whether, okay, forget black folks saying the N-word, that we're even debating that white people should be able to say the word, to me speaks to the facade that we continue to live in.
Oh, they shouldn't be able to say the word.
It's hard as an artist in music, because your fans are going to say it because they're singing your song.
Right.
So, like, with my different artist friends that I have, you know, they kind of, you allow it in certain settings, and I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's hard to, because these are your fans, they singing your song, so they, you know, they're saying the word, and I think that I've seen that a lot more lately.
Yeah,
like white people like saying it in concerts or different, you know, elements, situations like that. And it's a little weird, but it's like, what do you do in that type of situation?
There was a YouTube video that was like
who
a week or two.
Pulled somebody on stage let them rap?
And then they did it was a white girl, and she said the N-word.
Kendrick.
Was it Kendrick?
I didn't know if it was Chance or Kendrick. Yeah, okay. Kendrick Lamar. And he called her out, because she, you know, on stage. But I'm like, can you?
But see, in my brain, that goes back to, there are some white people that live in this fake world of their own, that they belong and are allowed to and have permission to do and say anything they want to anytime. And I think that is very indicative of our culture right now, that like you are owed, nobody owes you any, you're not owed to say the N-word just because the rapper that you like raps about it, because it's been a part of his existence.
Right.
Like, you can rap, I can go through I can sing a song in a car with my mama and never say a swear word because I don't cuss in front of my mama.
Right.
So to act like you can't like enjoy and rap along and not say the N-word, to me only speaks to the fact that you feel entitled to be able to say and do whatever you want. And that's what we act like in this. We can do, our freaking president is doing whatever the he wants, right. And we're like fine with it.
But it comes back to white privilege. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying. You know? They're fine with it. Yeah. So to blame it on, don't blame it on, it ain't the music, y'all. We fucked up. That's how. Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get down to. It's us. Thank you. We're on the same team.
It's our fault.
It's our fault.
Whatever.
All right. Well, we got one more story to do because we want to get to Starbound really quick. So last story about music. When we know that Nas is dropping his album.
He dropped
it this week, and Jay-Z and Beyonce are dropping their...
They dropped it on his own.
Everything is love. Yes, so there is a social media kind of started a riff, or was questioning a riff between Jay-Z and Nas, because we know back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a huge feud between the two. They both rapped about each other several times, went on interviews, dissing each other. And Nas wanted everybody to know, he cleared it up. There is no dissing towards Jay-Z. He is happy about Bay and Jay dropping their albums. He ain't worried about them dropping on the same time period that he is. In fact, he said he's more focused on black excellence than worrying about
it's black all about
beef.
The love, man. It's all about uplifting each other, man. We're stronger together than we are apart at the end of the day. And I've been happy and to see all the powerful black people coming together, man. It's amazing. We in a really special time in history. Even though it's a lot of, you know, weird things going on, bad things, black people are coming together right now, and we're really binding together and trying to do some great things. And I feel like in the next 10 years, it's going to be a whole different outlook on everything that's going on in the world because of us coming together like that.
And what kind of influenced you to have your particular sound? Because, you know, there's so many different directions that you could go in music right now. But you, after listening to, you know, your record and watching the video, I was like, man, you want to change things in music. Yeah. But where did that come from in you?
The kids, man. The kids show me so much love, man. And they really need someone to look up to. And they're gonna look up to somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to be that person that they can look at, and I know that I'm gonna do things in a certain way that is gonna be responsible and respectful, and still turned up and lit, and still can be fresh and all that. You could be all that stuff, but you don't have to be a gimmick. You don't have to be You don't have to be anything that's negative. You could be yourself and be dope and be great. So that's what I'm all about. That's the kids, man. The kids drive me every day to never give up, and I try to inspire them to never give up.
So you're not that? Who was that for you though? Coming up, like that, you were like
the crazy thing is where I come from. We talked about it a little bit. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, North Side, where Prince is from, and coming up from the North Side. You know, even though Prince is from there, Prince is super low key. He's not, you know, out and about. You, I never got a chance to meet him. You know, a lot of us didn't. He did a lot of stuff behind the scenes that I learned about later. Mm-hmm. But coming up, I didn't have anybody from my city that I could look at and be like, wow, they walk the same streets as me, and now they're up on this pedestal doing what they love to do, and I get to see them. And, you know, really, I feel like kids need to see what's possible. You can't just tell them what's possible. You have to be the change that you want you want to see. And that's what I'm really trying to do. I want, like I was saying, to answer your question is, so from the beginning, I always wanted to be that. I wanted to be that person that the kids from where I'm from can look at and say, you know, he went to the same park I went to and played basketball, and he did this, that, and the other. And now, you know, I don't know if y'all know, but I work with Floyd Mayweather, and I travel all over the world and stuff. And I've been able to do all types of different stuff. And then I get to come back to my city and tell them, you know, you can do this too. You know what I mean? That's I always wanted to be that, and because we had an absence of that where I come from. And I always wanted to be there. So,
well, it's dope that you are willing to take on the role of the person that they're looking at, like a role model. And because I know a lot,
I'm a celebrity. I didn't ask to be a role model.
Right, but there's a responsibility when you become a celebrity. I'm sorry, you got in this industry. It comes along with it. If you have a following, there's a responsibility that you have with that. I don't care what you say. 100%. But I appreciate that that's your, you know, that you kind of came in with a different mentality than I've seen a lot of artists in a long time. How did the relationship start with Floyd Mayweather? Because I know you're like a 360 approach, because you're not just an artist. You got, you know how to edit, you know how to do marketing, you know how to do the business. So that's an interesting approach, especially right now. But how did that start with Mayweather?
So I own a company called New Wave, me and my brother Nino Powers. And we started off with, it's an artist from Minneapolis named Lil James. I don't know if y'all heard of him before, but he signed to Floyd. And we started flying ourselves out to Las Vegas, you know, as much as we could, and work with Lil James. And we were shooting and running his Instagram for about a year, and ended up getting fired from my jobs because he took too much time, paid time off, and all that. and ended up getting an opportunity with Floyd to do that and get paid to do it with Lil James. And then, you know, Floyd liked our hustle and liked what we do, and took us on a couple world tours and everywhere, man, just shooting for him. And now, you know, our company runs all the marketing for his club in Las Vegas.
Oh, dope.
And then, that's amazing.
And we do, like, we just went to Cabo and shot a wedding for his sister. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a website for his club and all the marketing. So he keeps us pretty busy with that as well. So, you know, that's...
You need some help, man?
I know, right?
All these checks being thrown around. You need some help with these checks? We're available.
Seriously.
You know what I'm saying?
Host an event. Flying this,
you said Cabo and Europe. I'm available. So you want me to hold a camera? I'm cool. I can do a mic interview. Whatever you need, brother. Yes. I wear my Black Excellence shirt for Amex.
Yes, sir.
What is something great that you learned from him that's helped you in your career? Like you were like, wow, I'm going to take that from Mayweather.
Two things is probably the biggest thing. We're stronger together than we are apart. That's one big thing. And I try to always incorporate that with my friend group and my company and everybody that's around me. You know, we have to make each other better all the time. And then the other thing is champions can adapt to anything. And in life, you know, the people that make it, I always say the people that make it are the ones that never gave up. And the reason why never giving up is such a cliche thing to say, but when I break it down, you have to go through certain obstacles and they never stop. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that people forget. You know, you look at people that made it or whatever, and they think, oh man, everything is peachy, everything good. No. They still hustling every single day if they want to continue to be where they are.
Yeah.
They still hustling every single day and adapting to different things that are changing in their life, different things that are changing in, you know, whatever business that they're doing, and continuously being great. And that's one of the best things he's taught me, Champions can adapt to anything, and that's why he's 50 and 0.
All right. So, so in 15, 20 years, what does your Black excellence empire look like?
Man, that's Wakanda.
Once again, invite a brother to Wakanda land with you and a sister. We'll be right there. Like,
right. Yes.
Seriously.
Oh, God, I love it. No, really,
with the movement, man, what we're trying to do is inspire as many people around the world, not just Black people. Black excellence is just about inspiring, because Black people inspire, like I just said, hip-hop is the number one genre in America, and that's mostly Black people that are doing that type of music, and we're inspiring all types of people from the music that we're making. And with Black excellence, it's more so a mindset that we're trying to instill into the younger generation that's coming up, and anybody that wants to listen to that type of message, we're pushing greatness.
I love it.
That's
man.
It. Let's keep be up, great.
Keep, I love it, great. Man. We got to get out of here, but I'm curious, who's your favorite rapper out right now?
Somebody asked me this the other day, man. It's so tough. I would say overall, dang, man.
You got a big one.
I'll give you two. I'll let you have two if that makes it easy.
I got it. Right. J. Cole.
Okay. Why J. Cole?
Because J. Cole, I used to listen to him when he first came out, and he was super conscious. You know, he's still conscious, but anyway, he was super conscious when he first came out, and it's kind of hard to hit mainstream that type of vibe. Mm-hmm. And people thought he was going to fall off, and his stuff was boring. I was saying, one of the albums, I forget which one it was, but it was actually boring. I'm like, dang. I'm like, I like J. Cole, but I want him to find that niche. And I've just watched him grow into a point that his last two albums have hit the mark on point, and I'm just excited for him. Like you said, champions can adapt to anything. He's getting his point across, and he's getting the mainstream vibes. And the same thing with Kendrick. But Kendrick kind of been hitting since the beginning.
Yeah.
But J. Cole had to go through a hump. He had to figure out a way to get his point across, but still make it that people can have fun and listen to it.
I like that, man. And where can fans find you on social media? More about your music, all your new projects you got going on everywhere.
So y'all can look me up on IG, Starbound 612. My song Black Excellence is on YouTube. You could just search Black Excellence. It was crazy. I come up first. If you go on YouTube and just search Black Excellence,
you actually did come up first.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's crazy. But or you could just look me up on YouTube. It's Starbound. The S is a money sign because we TMT to the day we DIE. You dig?
Okay.
But I'm also working on a project right now. A new project. I just went to Hawaii and I went to a school called Kalama Intermediate. And I met like 900 students and took a bunch of pictures, performed for them. I've been talking to them on FaceTime for about 2 years, and I finally got a chance to meet them, and it was amazing, crazy experience. My first time in Hawaii. And I went back to Minnesota and did a surprise performance at the school that I shot the music video at for their graduation. And from doing that and being able to really interact with the kids, that was my first time really being able to interact with them with the Black Excellence Movement. It made me want to do a project for the kids, all turn up music, all clean, so I can go around the schools and be able to perform more music other than just Black Excellence and a couple other things I got. So that's what I'm working on right now. I actually was working on an album, and I put it on hold so that I can do this for the kids, and I'm going to come back and do my album. Follow me, man.
All this positivity. And once again, you said Hawaii, you throwing in these other locations,
right?
Brother. No, I'm looking forward to seeing where your career goes, man.
For sure.
You have a lot of talent, man, and I'm going to enjoy watching it, man.
I appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank y'all for having me on here.
And
Courtney,
thank you.
Where can people find you and your Afro Puffs and your
Afro Puffs? I'm going to be where I'm going to be always. I'm all over the social medias at Stuart Starlet.
All right. And I was going to say, Anthony, can we go out with the video? It's like, like that kind of feeling right now.
Anthony was Black on top accent. Of that.
He was on it.
He was like, yeah.
You can find me at Daryl Kristen on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and on Reels channel, Broken Famous. And we'll see you guys next week. Everybody check out the BET Awards that are Sunday night as well. Yeah. A lot of good performances on there.
For sure.
And we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, next week. But we're going to go out right now with Black Excellence. Check
Before we leave, hold on. Can't nobody stop me. I'm unstoppable. I can do anything, and so can you. It's Starbound, baby.
Bam. Peace.
Kevin Undergaro, Daryl Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff. We would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.
With a crown, I was a king as a child. We were all destined to fail. Our screams nobody could hear, but still somehow we prevailed. Found strength and power of will.
Black sailor, black and I'm black.